Welcome to Misfits Theology Podcast, where together we're learning to question our faith in order to cultivate a deeper trust in God. Enjoy.
So, cuddle bunnies. That's so stupid. Welcome to the Misfits Theology Podcast. I'm your host, Gabriel Gordon. Today, we are here again with the famous, the one and only Father Tom Dahlman, or as we like to call him around here, Vader Dahlman.
One of the most well-known priests in my house. And my children think I'm great. And I've got a few relatives that like my stuff, so I'm pretty well-known.
Pretty well-known. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know, Vader is actually German for father. Mm-hmm. So if we were in England, it would be Vader Tom.
You mean Germany?
Sorry, Germany. If we were in Germany, don't you know that the Nazis took over back in the 40s and they started speaking German?
I did not know that.
Then on.
No.
And you need to
brush our education system is failing us, apparently.
Well, today we are doing the Why Go Anglican series. So if you remember Father Tom's first episode, you've heard his story. You've heard how he's kind of come to Anglicanism. So today we're going to have him try to convince us, the audience, to why go Anglican. So, Father Tom, do you want to...
Well, one of the most convincing reasons to go Anglican is because it's one of the few churches that will tell you it's fine if you don't go Anglican. Anglicans don't believe they're the only Christians. They often will just take responsibility for the people in their community because they have that kind of state church thing built into their DNA where still in England, you can never darken the door of the church, but if you go to your local parish priest and say, hey, I need some help, or I need counseling, or I need something from the church, you know, help, I need a funeral, I need a wedding, they do it. Yeah. Because that's the way England works, but it's built into the DNA of all Anglican churches, Episcopal churches around the world. We take ownership for our communities, generally, mm-hmm. and we don't worry if they're Anglican or Catholic or Methodist or Jewish or what have you.
Yeah.
They're part of our community, so they're in our parish, so we are active. So I think that is a good reason to go Anglican. Another good reason is... it's a way of being Christian that works well in our divided culture. Right now in our country, we're divided along political lines horribly. We also have built into the DNA of Anglicanism the freedom to disagree. We call it the Elizabethan settlement usually, but when they were working out all the kinks of trying to live together in this new way of being Christian, Elizabeth said, essentially, we'll have common prayer, not common belief. So all you Puritans, Congregationalists, it's fine for you to believe that, just come to church. All you Romans, Catholics, it's fine for you to believe that, just come to church, because we're here to pray together. And so we've said, if it's not in the Nicene or Apostles' Creed, we can debate it. And so it's a way of being Christian that's historic, that's faithful, but also with a ton of freedom built into it.
Yeah.
So we have many members of our parish who struggle with a lot of traditional Christian beliefs, but they know it's not about your individual faith. It's about the faith of the community. So in the creed, we say, we believe in one God. This is our... Fred over here on the pew might be struggling with that. He might be agnostic practically, whereas he's sitting next to someone who came out of the Southern Baptist tradition, and they're just there because they have a gay kid and they got treated mean at church. You know what I mean? But they're essentially Southern Baptist still, but they're on the same pew together because it's a communal statement of faith, not a individual. It's okay for individuals to struggle, we think, or to question. This is about the community of And that's also built into our church because from the beginning we were the via media, the middle way between Catholic and Protestant.
Yeah.
We kept the Catholic tradition and structures while making some reforms. In fact, I think accurately we're really just Reformed Catholic is what we truly are. So what was my first reason? That we don't think you have to go Anglican, so that's a good reason to go Anglican.
Yeah.
Second, that we have the freedom to disagree built in, so it's a way I think you can be a faithful Christian in the United States today. I think third is it's got a tie to the historic faith of Christianity. More than a tie, I mean, part of the problem in our world, in Christianity, and especially in the States, is people will start a new church at the drop of a hat, you know?
Yeah.
We have so many denominations.
You prefer hymns. I can't worship with you.
Yes. You think that, you know, Isaiah is two, first Isaiah and second Isaiah, and I think there's three Isaiahs, so I'm going to start the Protestant church of three Isaiahs. So, you know, churches have split over dumber things. So, I think we all in our country could do better with looking at our great-great-grandparents' churches and realizing they're still there.
Yeah.
And they're still in their communities they started in. Some of these churches, I mean, I have a friend in seminary who's from England. He moved to Houston. He's becoming an Episcopal priest. He grew up in the Church of England. And he was baptized in a church that was built, part of it was built by Romans. The baptistry he was baptized in was from the 300s. And I used to say, you're the most authentically Christian person here. You know, he had the... Anyway, those are still our churches. So we have this connection to the historic faith, and we've still kept those lists of bishops going back to when St. Augustine of Canterbury came to England and found the Celtic church already there that started... planting churches, and we trace our lineage back to those guys still.
Talking about Augustine of Hippo?
No, there's more than one
Augustine. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Our big Augustine is called there's Augustine of Hippo, is obviously a doctor of the church, and we read him a ton, but
yeah.
Augustine of Canterbury was the missionary who came to reestablish Christianity in England and was surprised to find the Celtic Christians already there with women in leadership. But, so we have that tie to the historic faith. Another good reason to go Anglican is we've got N.T. Wright. We've got C.S. Lewis. We wrote the King James Bible. We didn't write it. We translated it. The Book of Common Prayer and the King James Bible are the most read things in the English language besides the works of Shakespeare. And... that came out of the Church of England. If you were married in any church in Christianity or buried in any church in Christianity, had a family member buried, you probably heard in the wedding things that came out of the Book of Common Prayer, even if you were married like me in a Church of Christ. Or if you were buried, you heard ashes to ashes, dust to dust. That came out of the Book of Common Prayer. So it's... rooted in our culture. It's part of our heritage as English speakers, really, whether we were English or not, but those who speak English, we have this, we inherited a lot of our way of speaking from that Book of Common Prayer, the historic one.
Do you guys, so you mentioned C.S. Lewis and you mentioned N.T. Wright. Do you guys claim John Wesley too, don't you?
We do claim the Wesley brothers. They died being Anglican priests, or one of them was a priest. I can't remember both of them were. But yeah, they never intended to start the Methodist, a new church. They died being Anglican priests. We've got Absalom Jones, who in, I think, 1786 or 5 was ordained the first black priest in the United States. We've got... we can just keep going. I mean...
Was George Whitefield?
Most of the founding fathers. The first church in the 13 original colonies was a Church of England, obviously. Most people don't know this, but when the Mayflower arrived, there were already 26 Church of England clergy working in the States with churches.
Oh,
the
so
pilgrims were not the first Christians in the colonies.
So the Puritans weren't the first ones over?
No, they weren't. That part of history doesn't get read very often, but we got George Washington. We've got, you know, we can keep going.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to go back to the Apostles of the Nicene Creed. So, you guys have, you know, you kind of said that the Apostles' Creed and Nicene Creed are both, you know, kind of your statement of faith in the Anglican Church. And it kind of goes as, if it's not in the creeds, it's debatable. So, maybe explain a little bit how your guys's statement of faith, the Apostle Nicene Creed, is different from the kind of statement of faith that someone maybe from an evangelical background grew up with.
So, like if you're in the PCUSA, for example, Presbyterian, not the PCUSA, the PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, I think it's the Westminster Confession of Faith that you swear to uphold when you become a minister in that church. Well, if you start to question parts of it, you can become, you know, put on a heresy trial or the Book of Order in the Methodist Church. But because a lot of those churches are built on this premise of individualism, they're built on the premise of we're saved by belief, which I would say we get from Gnostics, not from Christians. But so for us, these statements of faith are more about the unity of the church than making sure everyone dots their I's and crosses their T's. They're weekly liturgical reminders of who we are and what our community thinks, but they're not intended to be slaps across the face for people who struggle with it, that they better shape up and fly right, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's rooted in a communal faith. That's, as I said, does that make sense?
I think so. So you would say that for like an evangelical statement of faith versus a statement of faith of the Anglican Church, which is the Nicene and Apostles' Creed, that the evangelical statement of faith is more individualistic and the Apostles and Nicene Creed as a statement of faith for the Anglican Church is more community-oriented.
Communal. Well, the Apostles' Creed was originally a baptismal creed, so it was about the individual, but not even that in the sense that we hear that expressed. Mm-hmm. We're so radically individual, and we read the Bible, and we read church history through that lens, and we assume they think and act just like us, but yeah. I don't think that's the case. I was going to say something brilliant, and now I forgot what it was.
Well, while you're remembering what that brilliant thing was, maybe tell our listeners a little bit about, like, what the Apostles and Nicene Creed, what do they say in them? You don't have to, you know, say everything that's mm-hmm. in them, but kind of the general ideas that are in both of those.
Well, both of these were developed over time, and that's also something that's unique to Americans. We kind of like to think that we can just invent things, reinvent the wheel, and that's the other great thing about them is I didn't write these. My great-great-grandparents didn't even write them. You know, these were written before the church split. They were written before the Great Schism. They were written when we all could get along with each other. And anything written after that fact, we have to think about it coming from just a part of the church. These are statements of faith that came when we were all still together. And they weren't written in a week or a month. They were written over years of arguing and trying to resolve differences. And they were written so that we could be united, to bring the church together as one. And in some cases, politics played a part in it. But anyone who doesn't think politics still play a part in the church, you know,
yeah,
are kind of fooling themselves. So and to me, that's also what's so beautiful about my church, the Episcopal Church, Anglicanism. I don't even choose the readings we have on Sunday. In my evangelical days, I could be sitting on the toilet and have a great idea. Or I could be watching Desperate Housewives and think, I want to do a series on Desperate Housewives. Or, you know, the culture determined what we were doing. We were fighting the idol of relevancy. Mm-hmm. And we aren't worried about that anymore. We're trying to be Christian in our way. And trying to be Christ's hands and feet in the community. And we're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. We do a lot of stupid stuff. But we aren't reinventing the wheel every week. We're not. There are some Episcopal churches where you can go and sing new songs. Most of them, they're going to be old. But even in the ones where you're singing new songs, it's not. It's that liturgy is still there. So I'm not trying to get into a worship war here. I'm just saying, we're not fighting the idol of relevancy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And the creeds are one way that we do that. This is a grounding.
Yeah.
And it's grounding in stuff that's big. We believe in one God. We believe in one Lord Jesus Christ. We believe in the Holy Spirit. You know, these are these big essential truths that held Christianity together for 1,000 years.
Yeah. So in the Anglican Church, with affirming the Nicene and the Apostles' Creed, you guys are affirming as essential to the faith, like you said, the Trinity, deity of Christ, incarnation, virgin birth, things like that, that are, resurrection. If you take these things away, then it seems to, you know, that doesn't look like Christianity at that point anymore.
And why do we have to keep rehashing these? It keeps us from having to re-debate everything every 50 years, you know? Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that it seems to me that in a lot of churches, they're, especially in evangelicalism, their statement of faith are so narrow and so meticulous and detailed. You know, it's not just we believe in the Trinity and the deity of Christ and the resurrection and the virgin birth. It's none of those churches would deny that. But they would also add, oh, and we believe this particular thing about Scripture.
Right.
Or we believe this particular thing about...
strange nuance that's getting blown out of proportion, right?
Yeah. Or, like, we believe that, you know, men are head of the household or what have you. So things that don't seem to be essential to the faith. So I think that's noteworthy for Anglicanism.
The first time I visited an Episcopal church as a seeker, the most powerful part of the service for me was the Nicene Creed, where we stand up and say, we believe in one God. Because an Episcopalians hear that and think, what? Why is that the most powerful part of the service? Because where I came from, I was in a church that the only thing I knew, and this will make you guess the tradition I came from, was that we shouldn't worship with the instrument. You know, that's the kind of thing they said. Or churches should be independent of each other. You know, and those are not deep historical truths of the faith that should hold large groups of people together. But we believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, etc., is something, you know. So it was really powerful to me that this is what we believe. It's just to be able to stand and say that was freeing for me. Based on my background.
Yeah.
I didn't have to figure everything out. There was something I could rest in or trust in. And I could debate other stuff. And that gives you the freedom to debate other things because you have this thing you can rest in.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I totally just lost my train of thought. It just went out the door. I had something brilliant as well. And it just went out the right door. Do you remember what you were going to say?
I was going to say another reason to go Anglican is because we have this freedom of belief, and because we debate, we have the freedom to debate. We have women in leadership in our churches. You can be an Anglican or Episcopalian if you're gay. So you don't... Those folks get to be second-class citizens in a lot of the churches in our country. Or they can be there if it's a don't ask, don't tell kind of a situation. But yeah. If you're a woman who's called to ministry, and there are other churches where women can serve in ministry, but you're you might get to teach a kids class, you know, or bake pies, which those are good things, but what if you have giftedness to do more?
Yeah.
So there's another reason to go Anglican.
I remember what I was going to say. I think another benefit to being a church, if their statement of faith is the Nicene and Apostles' Creed, is that because those were created before, you know, the church started splitting off, before Orthodox, the Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox Church existed, before the Catholic Church existed, before the Protestant Church existed, when the church was just the universal church, you know, these were created. And so, in having those as your statement of faith, you're coming alongside, you know, your Baptist brothers and sisters. Right. You're coming alongside your Pentecostal brothers and sisters, your Catholic brothers and sisters, Orthodox brothers and sisters. You're coming alongside the whole of the church, universal, and affirming alongside of them by having the Nicene and the Apostles' Creed that were pre any of those splits, by having that as your statement of faith.
Right. I agree with you. Yeah. Thanks for helping me, Gabriel. Explain to people why you should go Anglican.
No problem. So we've got to go.
Sorry, I have another meeting.
Father Tom is a busy, busy man. He,
super important.
Super important. He, actually has to meet with the president. So, we'll either make this.
He's got a lot of explaining to do.
So either, we'll make this into a two-part episode, or, we'll just have to have him back, or, you know, or something like that.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for being on the show again, Father Tom. I hope that this last 20 minutes has been beneficial to you, to me, and to the listeners. So is there anything else you want to say, anything you want to promote, your own podcast? Or
I have a podcast with some friends called Fundamentally Drained, and you can look for it on your podcast server. I'd also like to say the Episcopal Church welcomes you. If you're listening in Shawnee, Oklahoma, we're here every Sunday morning at 8, 10:30, and Wednesday nights at 7, with meal at 6:15, Compline at 8. We'd love to meet you.
Yeah. And I want to shout out Father Tom's podcast real quick. There are three of you, right, on that podcast? And they're all Anglican. And so if you want to hear more things from an Anglican perspective, I encourage you to check that podcast out.
Thanks, Gabriel.
Yeah, no problem. Well, thanks for coming and listening to it in our show, all you listeners. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on the Misfits Theology Club podcast.